Chapter 13. A Surprising Date. Joyce.
I am getting worried. Elizabeth has been gone too long, more than 2 hours. I'm writing this while I'm waiting for Donna to arrive. She's very angry with us and very worried, and so am I. I always thought Elizabeth could not be hurt by anyone. I hope I'm not wrong.
Sister Margaret Ann. Margaret Farrell, 1948 to 1971. Elizabeth takes Matthew Mackey's hand and holds it. She looks out over the wall to the fields, the hills, the trees, the birds. The cemetery really is a beautiful place. Then the peace is broken by the sound of running feet. Elizabeth looks at her watch.
"This will be Joyce and the police," she says. "I told them that if I wasn't back in 2 hours, they had to come and get me."
"Was it that long?" Elizabeth nods.
"There was a lot to say, Matthew. And now you'll have to tell it all again when the police finally get up this hill."
Elizabeth can see Chris Hudson now, running heavily towards them. She waves and she can see he's glad, both that she is still alive and that he can now stop running. Matthew Mackey sits in an armchair of the jigsaw room. The Thursday Murder Club are in their usual seats, and Chris and Donna have brought in a couple of chairs from the lounge.
"I had only just arrived from Ireland," Mackey tells them. "I really was a priest back then. It was the same as now, very beautiful, very quiet. There were 100 nuns here, but you wouldn't know it. The head nun, Sister Mary, was very strict, and the other nuns were really frightened of her. But it was also a place of work. I'd walk around talking about God and take confessions."
"And you lived here?" asks Chris.
"There were some rooms at the back of the convent. They were nice. I wasn't allowed visitors, of course. That was the rule."
"A rule you followed?" asks Donna.
"At first, of course. But things change. I'd met Maggie very early on. She cleaned the chapel. You know when you look into someone's eyes for the first time and the whole world changes? That was Maggie. She used to come to confession, but say nothing. We just sat there, our hearts beating hard. Slowly, we fell in love, and she started to visit me in secret in my rooms."
"Can I just check?" says Chris. "Maggie is Sister Margaret Ann?"
"She is. I knew we had to get out. It would be easy enough. I'd find a different job. Maggie could nurse. But it was much harder for young women in those days, because then Maggie realised she was expecting a baby. And even worse, she told someone in the convent who told Sister Mary. Sister Mary called Maggie to her office and told her she was to be sent back to Ireland the next day. Maggie went to the chapel that night and hanged herself. She took her life and the life of our child." Father Mackey looks up at the other six people in the room.
"That's my story, and nothing was ever fine again."
"So is Maggie's grave up on the hill?" asks Ron.
"That was the deal I made," says Mackey. "I was to leave and go back to Ireland, where I retrained as a doctor. And in return for keeping quiet about Maggie,
I asked them to bury her in the cemetery here, where it's so peaceful. I knew Maggie didn't want to go back to Ireland.
And Sister Mary agreed?
Asks Donna. It looked better for her too. Fewer questions. I went back home, and that's where I stayed until I heard that Sister Mary had died. She's buried up in the cemetery too. When I heard the news, I left my job, packed a suitcase, and came back to stay as near as I could to Maggie.
And that's why you did everything you could to stop the bodies being moved?
Mackie nods. It was the only thing I could do for Maggie. It was all I had to say sorry and to say I still love you for the only love I ever knew and for our baby boy or girl. But it's a boy I've always carried in my heart. I called him Patrick.
I'm sorry to say this at this time, Father, says Chris. But this gives you a very good reason for killing Ian Ventham.
But I didn't do it, replies Mackie. Maggie would never have forgiven me if I'd killed Ventham. I've always done what Maggie would want because one day I'm sure I'll see her again and my little boy, and I want to do that with a pure heart.
With his tour of Cooper's Chase finished, Gordon Playfair is sitting with Ibrahim, Elizabeth and Joyce on Ibrahim's balcony. Gordon has a beer and the others are drinking wine. Chris and Donna have returned to Fairhaven. Matthew Mackie has gone home to Bexhill and Joyce has promised to visit him. She loves Bexhill.
I could get used to this place, says Gordon. There seems to be a lot of drinking here.
Always, agrees Ibrahim.
The phone rings and Ibrahim gets up to answer it.
That was Ron, he says when he returns. He wants us to join him in his apartment. Jason is with him and has something to tell us.
So, Bobby and I had lunch in the Black Bridge, Jason tells them, lifting a bottle of beer to his mouth. It felt like we sort of trusted each other. We'd both changed into better people, but we still couldn't be sure that the other hadn't killed Tony. Then our source came in and we asked him straight, "Has Johnny been back? Have you seen him?"
And had he seen him? Asks Elizabeth.
He had, says Jason. Johnny came over 3 days before Tony was murdered and left the day he died. He was angry with Tony for telling the police about him.
So why did Johnny send you the photograph, Jason? Asks Ibrahim.
Jason shakes his head.
I think he just wanted us to know it was him who killed Tony. Johnny was like that. Whatever he did, he had to let you know. And my address must be easy to find, as I'm a celebrity. But now I have something else to tell you.
Jason takes out his phone and turns it to show them a photograph on a dating app.
I think I know who killed Ian Ventham, he says. And tomorrow, I'm planning to meet them.
Having spent an enjoyable morning getting ready, Karen Playfair is now alone for a moment, sitting in an armchair. She is shaking her head, thinking of the excitement of preparing for the date, and then the date itself. Because Karen has met some strange men through dating apps, but this was the first time that someone had accused her of murder. The face pinged onto her phone yesterday evening. Jason Ritchie, the boxer and TV celebrity.
Well, why not? She had thought. This is better than usual.
He had messaged and she had replied, and suddenly there they were, eating a salad. Karen moves in her armchair and picks up something from the coffee table. It is the Cooper's Chase newsletter, cut to the chase. Back to the date. They had talked a little. Some wine arrived, and that was when Jason mentioned Ian Ventham. Karen immediately realised this was not a date and felt stupid. But then it got even worse when Jason started asking her questions like, hadn't she been there on the morning Ventham was killed? Yes, she had. Wasn't her dad refusing to sell his land to Ventham? Yes, he was, but look, here's our soup. Jason kept going. Surely, if her dad sold to Ventham, then she would get some of the money? Well, yes, but why not just say what you want to say, Jason? And so he had. And it was almost funny when he told her the police had been looking for someone who was at Cooper's Chase in the 1970s, even if she was a child, and still there now. And didn't Karen have good reasons? She wanted the money. Ventham was in the way of Karen making millions. And fentanyl was used. And that could be bought if you understood the internet. Didn't Karen work with computers? Jason was sure he had solved the case and was going to get a confession. He did not expect Karen to laugh in his face and explain that she worked for a school looking after their computers and had no better understanding of the internet than he did. She also said that she lived in one of the most beautiful places in England, and yes, she would like £1 million, but would rather be there with her dad happy than in some new home in a town where he felt sad and uncomfortable. Karen remembered how disappointed Jason had looked. He knew that she was telling him the truth. He had said sorry and offered to leave, but Karen had wondered if they should not try to enjoy the rest of their lunch. Because what if they got together, she said. Wouldn't this be the greatest and how did you meet story of all time? Which made them both laugh and got them talking, and suddenly they were having a lovely, long, wine-filled lunch. And this was why Jason had asked her back here to his father's for another drink and to explain to his dad. Just at this moment, Ron Ritchie walks in with Jason and a bottle of white. Jason sits down next to Karen and hands her her wine. He has been lovely to her since accusing her of murder. Karen puts Cut to the Chase back down on the table, and as she does, she sees a photograph. She picks it up again, just to be sure.
You all right, Karen? Says Jason.
You said the police wanted someone who was here in the 70s, who's still here now? She asks, slowly and carefully.
Ron looks at the photograph, but his brain won't take it in.
You're sure? He asks.
She nods.
It was a long time ago, but yes, I'm sure.
Ron's mind is racing.
This can't be.
He puts the wine down on the coffee table.
I need to go and talk to Elizabeth, he says.